Say, dudes, listen up. Is there a little too much salt and pepper in the lettuce?
Experience Control GX from Just for Men, the first shampoo with a brain. So what makes it so smart? It reduces gray the same way it grows in, gradually. The more you shampoo with Control GX, the less gray you have. Just use it until you like what you see. Now, how smart is that? Smart enough to be voted Men's Hair Care Product of the Year. Gradually reduce gray with the first shampoo with a brain. Find Control GX in the shave aisle. That's Control GX.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Starting with the Western Conference Finals. Now, throughout the Conference Finals, both the East and the West, we've been waiting for a good game. Waiting for one good game in either series, and last night we finally got it. Houston's win over Golden State wasn't just one good game. That was roughly five games in one. And now we've got ourselves a damn series. Now let's go back to the beginning of the game, which already feels like it was 10 days ago. You'll recall Houston was coming off a 41-point beatdown in Game 3. It was bad. But then came the news that Andre Iguodala would not play last night, so that was good for them. Then came the start of the game, though, and that was bad. Really, really bad for the Rockets. Thompson for two. Curry for three. Looney for two. Green for two. KD for three. Just like that. 12-0 Warriors. It seemed like Golden State was about to throw a shutout, even without Iggy. Golden State came out swinging. The Rockets looked like they were punch drunk. They're wandering around the court, out of sync, off kilter. It was so bad that James Harden passed up a wide open three. It looked like that series was going to be over before the quarter ended. And you could already hear the Harden critics warming up, getting ready to roast him. But then something happened. Something changed. Maybe the beard was not locked in early on. Maybe he wasn't on point. But then suddenly he got locked in, and he did so in a hurry. And there was no bigger moment in this first quarter comeback than the following. James Harden, meet Draymond Green.
Looked like he got away with a walk or a double dribble or something. Harden by two defenders to the rim, and he dunks it on Draymond Green, plus the foul. What an incredible play by James Harden.
It was. Rockets radio with that sound. It was. I mean, somehow after nearly getting knocked out in the first quarter, Houston gets up off the mat. They start landing shots of their own. And I'm not talking about jabs either. These guys were swinging from their heels. Haymakers, connecting. And then with less than 2 minutes to go in the half, Harden had back-to-back huge steals. This one setting up Chris Paul.
Turns it over. Harden steals it one-on-two. Goes to the rim. Leaves it back to Paul by himself. Lays it up and in. And the Rockets are up five.
And then this strip of Kevin Durant that he finished himself.
Another steal for Harden. Pick Durant's pocket by himself in the open floor for the slam. Now he's getting it done at both ends of the floor.
Pretty unbelievable. Harden silenced that crowd in a hurry. Not easy to do. An incredible first half from Harden and Paul. So after being down 12-0, Harden and Paul outscore the Warriors 38-34 the rest of the half. Houston takes a 7-point lead into halftime. But we know Golden State. We know what they do in the third quarter. We know what they've done all year long coming out of the locker room. And they did it again. Steph Curry goes crazy again. He drops 17 on Houston in the third, completely flips the tables on the Rockets. Then going into the fourth, Golden State's back up by 10. The game looked like it was over. Again, if that game's over, this series is over. Except it wasn't, because Houston came right back. After eating punches in the first quarter and coming back, they were once again swallowing haymakers, but they took every one of Golden State's punches, waited for the Dubs to punch themselves out, and then they came back yet again. And if you didn't know by now, the Rockets, these guys, tough as hell. PJ Tucker, huge. Eric Gordon lived up to the Splash Gordon rep. But really, this was about the fact that James Harden is a monster. Chris Paul is a wizard. Don't believe me? Check that baseline curveball, that wraparound, what the hell pass to Trevor Ariza for three.
Sealed in that corner. Paul whips it across on the skip to Ariza. Fakes it three steps right. Shoots for the lead. Got it! Trevor Ariza gives the Rockets the lead again with a corner three. 85-84 Houston.
Look, I know a lot of you don't like Chris Paul. I know a lot of you don't like Chris Paul because I've seen your tweets. And I know Chris Paul has come up short repeatedly in the postseason. Man, this dude was awesome. Awesome last night. But here's the thing. Houston did not win that game with their offense. You know they're going to score the ball. You know they're going to fill it up. But they didn't win with offense. They won with defense. They locked Golden State up in the fourth. After exploding in the third and watching Steph go off, Golden State had nothing in the last 12 minutes. And as great as they were in the third quarter, they were that bad in the fourth. Golden State, 3 of 18 from the field. 0 of 6 from beyond the arc in the fourth. They were so uncomfortable, so out of rhythm, so out of sync. Even when they had a chance to tie that game late, the best they could do was get a rough look from Klay Thompson. And that only happened because Kevin Durant had a better look and passed up the shot. And yes, I know the Warriors tried to call timeout there, but the refs didn't see it, they didn't get it, and they didn't get a great shot. And for the record, that's not why they lost that game. Golden State did not get the look they wanted, but the world got the series that it's been waiting on all year long. And the Warriors, for the first time in the KD era, are being tested. If Game 2 was not a wake-up call, then Game 4 sure as hell was. And now we have a series, Game 5, tomorrow night in Houston. Final thought, very un-Warrior-like not to finish. They had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, a chance to go up 3-1, and to drive a dagger right through their heart when that game and that series is over. And I thought that it was over heading to the fourth quarter. They just had a 34-point third. Steph Curry was going off. Golden State had won 39 of 40 this season when they led by 10 or more in the fourth quarter. So there was no way they were not going to finish and win the most important game of the year, right? Wrong. They had their boot on their throat, and they didn't finish. So instead of the Rockets being down 3-1 and dead on arrival, it's 2-2. They're headed back home. They have ripped back the home court, and now the Rockets are the ones who have all the mo, and we finally have a series. Mark Stein is back in the jungle. My man, it is so good to have you back already. Mark, how are you?
Wait a minute. You didn't say we have to be evolved to be on this show. If that's the prerequisite, I might be in trouble.
No, bro, you definitely have evolved. You have definitely evolved. In fact, Mark, how would you say, how different are you now, Mark, than when you first got into the business and you were killing it with ESPN? How different a reporter are you now than you were then?
You know, I'd like to think I'm a little smarter, a little more cautious, a little faster, but... And I don't know. I'm still the same jittery, panicky worrior I always was.
That's great.
I don't know.
No, man. I appreciate that. I think that's a real answer and a candid response. Personally, the way I read you, the way the conversation you and I had last time out, I would say no. I think you are very sure of yourself, rock solid. You're on your stuff. I think, yeah, we all evolve, man, right? You have to.
I'll take it. Your sign off is gold.
No, you got it. I mean that sincerely. All right, so if we go back to the start of last night's game, Golden State was coming off that 41-point beatdown of Houston. So going into Game 4, what were you thinking about the state of the series?
I mean, especially when the Warriors jumped out to that 12-0 lead, I was probably like everyone else. I thought the Rockets are broken. This thing's going to be a runaway. And the series is going to be over when the Warriors finish this thing. And then especially you thought that after the third quarter. But, man, that – you know, we came into these playoffs for D'Antoni, for Chris Paul, for James Harden. This series was really the biggest for all of them of their lives. And it's only 2-2. They still got to get two more wins. But what they did last night, they all answered their critics in the loudest possible fashion. That was – I mean, the Rockets didn't just come back. I mean, they survived a third quarter haymaker and won the game with defense. When have we ever said that about a Mike D'Antoni team? But last night, you had to say it. They won that game with defense.
I would agree with everything you just said. When they fell behind 12-0, and especially when James Harden passed on that open three, I'm like, these guys are dead. I mean, they're not coming back from that. And Harden is going to take a terrific amount of heat. But then they did bounce back. But then Golden State hit them with that third quarter. And when they went into the fourth down by 10, I thought it was over then too. But Mark, to your last point, have you ever seen the Rockets play better defense than they did last night at any point?
No, and look, they had to take advantage of the situation because Iguodala wasn't there. And you can say, how dare the Warriors whine about anything when they have four All-Stars? But you saw last night how much they miss Iguodala, how big a deal he is to them. Not just for his D and his passing, but just, you know, the settling effect. He is, you know, he's their, you know, break glass and save us kind of guy. I mean, he calms them down in tough situations. And that's kind of one of the, you know, few negatives of the Warriors' existence. They so often pound teams, especially at home, that when they're in a close game, it is a little bit of a, it can be, we've seen this happen to them on occasion. It doesn't happen a lot. Happened in game seven of the finals when they blew the 3-1 lead. You know, when they get in a tough game, they looked raggedy in the fourth quarter. They looked lost. Steve Kerr said it was fatigue. I'm sure that was part of it, but the Rockets only played seven guys. They couldn't have been super fresh. So the Rockets had to take advantage of that opportunity, but I mean, they did. I mean, their small ball team has really delivered in this series. You know, you put P.J. Tucker and Ariza and Gordon with the two stars, and that, you know, they're getting it done.
Wednesday's episode of the Daily Jungle is brought to you by Fan Exchange. If you're in the market for tickets right now, a game, a concert, or a show, you've got to get your tickets from Fan Exchange.
For a safe, easy, and reliable experience, tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed. No getting to the gate and worrying about getting in.
Game 5 in H-Town, they have tickets. Hall & Oates Summer Tour, they have tickets. Hamilton, coast to coast, you know it, they have tickets.
Fan Exchange gets you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the very best prices at fanexchange.com. Use the promo code ROME. That's promo code ROME and get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets. Fan Exchange, promo code ROME.
Mark Stein joining us. Mark, in terms of execution and the fact that they looked a little ragged down the stretch, what do you make of the way the Warriors handled the final full possession before Chris Paul was fouled?
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that was obviously a mess, but really the whole fourth quarter was just, you know, shockingly bad, especially as good as they looked in the third quarter. I think the stat is, you know, that the Warriors were 30-0. When they win the third quarter by double digits. That was the first time they've lost, I think, all season in that situation. So they were unquestionably discombobulated. I mean, they just, it became one-on-one, the ball stopped moving. You could see Steve Kerr on the sideline. He's trying to get these guys to move the ball, and he makes that same motion whenever the ball sticks, and it just, they completely fell out of their offense last night. Now, look, if any team is capable of regrouping and now going to Houston and turning this series on its head again, of course it's Golden State. But, I mean, you know, the Rockets, to go from a 41-point loss to that, such a gritty win, I mean, you know, it's the last thing I expected, honestly.
I thought they showed a hell of a lot of heart, and I was not sure they had that in them, but I would never question them again after seeing that last night. Mark Stein, my guest. You know, to your point, you started this point. Let's finish this thought. It's the first time that the Warriors have been really tested in the playoffs since Kevin Durant arrived. Now, after they lost game two, there seemed to be a feeling that they didn't take the Rockets very seriously. Then they came back. They hammered them in game three. So after what happened last night, where do you think Golden State is mentally right now?
Well, I think one thing we do kind of underestimate that they have been in some pretty dire situations, and most of, you know, all of them really were before Durant got there, but, you know, they faced a 2-1 deficit to Memphis. They were down 3-1 to Oklahoma City. They've been in some bad spots in this 4-year run. So again, no team is more capable of pulling itself together and going to Houston and turning this series around again. Look, they've got issues. They came into this series with a depth problem. And now, you know, Iguodala's hurt. We don't know how seriously Klay Thompson is injured. Was that just something, you know, can he shake that knee thing, or is that something going to linger? They obviously don't have Patrick McCaw. So, you know, they came into the playoffs. They had six centers on the roster because they wanted to be, you know, they use all their centers in different situations, and they, you know, they've kind of done it by committee, and they wanted to have all these options, but they cut Omri Caspi, and now a couple of their wings are banged up. I mean, they really are lacking in terms of wing depth. So I think they surely did the right thing by holding Iguodala out if the injury was that bad, but they're going to need Iguodala to come back and have a big game five. I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I don't think they can win the series without him.
Mark Stein, my guest. One last stop before you go, Mark. Last night's game was the first competitive game of the conference finals in either side. How likely is it then that we get another one tonight when Cleveland goes into Boston?
Yeah, I mean, that's one where, I mean, Cleveland, they resurrected themselves with the two wins at home. But now every game in that series is either a travel day or a game day. And with Cleveland being the much older team, you have to think as this thing goes on, it's going to be harder for them to bounce back. But by the same token, you know, Boston has so much pressure tonight because they've just been awful on the road. I mean, they've got a young team, and they're finding it really tough to go into places like Cleveland. I mean, we saw it in Milwaukee. They couldn't win a road game in the Milwaukee series. They're really struggling in the road environment. So they know they've got to win tonight. You know, you don't want to let LeBron go home with a 3-2 lead. But honestly, at this point, let's be clear. What seems more likely, LeBron finding a way to win a game in Boston or the Celtics coming together on the road and stealing one in Cleveland? I think we all know the answer. So Boston is under tremendous pressure tonight. They've got to win at home.
Mark Stein, the pride of Cal State Fullerton, and he covers the NBA for the New York Times. Back in the jungle. Great job again, Mark. Always good to have you on. Nice to have you back, in fact, Mark. Thank you very much.
All right, man. Always good to catch up.
Clones, cops are stepping up enforcement on motorists who are not wearing their seatbelts. If you've thought to yourself, I'm not going very far, or I'm in a rush, or seatbelts are just too uncomfortable, then know this. You're putting yourself at the risk of injury or death.
There's no excuse for not wearing a seatbelt. I don't care where you're going. I don't care how long your trip is. I don't care how uncomfortable you think that wearing that seatbelt can be.
You know the saying. Now make it a household rule to live by. Click it or ticket. When you're not wearing your seatbelt, you're risking serious injury or death. It's a fact. Cops are writing tickets, so don't take the risk. Don't play the odds. Again, let me say it so it sticks. Click it or ticket.
This next take is highly graphic in nature. That's your warning. Highly graphic in nature. Now, I know sometimes when I say that, it's to set up a joke. And I end up talking about something that's highly graphic in nature, like a nasty dunk, a vicious crossover, something like that. That's not what I'm doing here. That's not what I'm talking about here. What I'm about to talk about is truly disgusting. It's revolting. The kind of thing that would make you want to put down your lunch, or skip lunch, or never eat a lunch ever again, or any meal. Good luck trying to get to sleep tonight after what I have to say, because that's pretty much out of the question too. Because I could fill your tank with nightmare fuel for days after this story. Right? Have I given you enough warning, enough leeway? You know, right? Something really graphic is coming. In fact, I don't even know why I'm bringing this up. I shouldn't even get into this because it's that gross. It's that disgusting. It's that revolting. But I will. It's a sports show. This is a sports story. I'm a pro. Strap in. Here it is. This is the story of Columbus Blue Jackets prospect Carson Meyer. Carson Meyer plays his college hockey at Miami U. He was selected in the sixth round of last year's draft after a really nice freshman season. But then his numbers fell off suddenly. He went from 26 points in 32 games to just 9 points in 34 games. I mean, that's a significant fall off, a dramatic plummet. But it was more than just the sophomore slump, way more. Because not only did his numbers dip, pretty much everything else did as well. He was suddenly tired all the time, lost his appetite, lost a lot of weight, just was not himself. Doctors could not figure out what the hell was going on with this guy. That is until February. When, and here comes the disgusting, revolting part, steel yourself. Meyer goes into the bathroom, goes to use the restroom, and from here, let me read from The Athletic, which has got a piece up on Meyer right now. And I quote, "I was going to the bathroom, just like normal," Meyer said, "and it came out." It was a 25-inch tapeworm. The head, the neck, all of the segments, about 50 of them, it was orange. Meyer almost fainted. Yeah, Van Smack almost fainted reading that. A 25-inch tapeworm. It's got to be the most disgusting thing I've ever heard. Shout out to Aaron Portsline of The Athletic for this sentence. He writes, and I quote, "It was a 25-inch tapeworm, the head, the neck, and all the segments, about 50 of them. It was orange." I'm not sure what's the most revolting part about that. The fact that it was more than 2 feet long, or that it had a head and a neck and about 50 segments, and that it was orange. What's the most disgusting thing about that? And it was living inside this guy for about a year. Let's go ahead and call it a tie for dead last. I mean, was that thing swimming around in his toilet, trying to get back out and attack Carson again? I mean, I don't know how long that they can survive outside the body. Just know that I'm not going to YouTube to find out. But we're not done here. Hey, Carson, what else you got? Tell me something else. Quote, this is like maybe the best part. "I FaceTimed my mom and was like, what the hell is this thing?" Meyer said. "I was freaking out, absolutely freaking out." Holly Meyer said she's never been so horrified or relieved. Quote, "I was trying to be calm," she said. "He showed me everything. And I remember saying, you have to get that to the trainer and figure out what it is so they can get you fixed. And I did say at that moment, this is why everything has been the way it's been, Carson. This was it. It was scary, but it was a relief." End quote. Now, I gotta say, like, every parent deals with the same sort of struggle when their kid goes away to college. You know, how much do I stay involved in that child's life? I mean, you're used to talking to them every single day, seeing them every single day. So when they leave, what do? How much is too much? You don't want to be a helicopter parent. But at the same time, you do want to be a part of their lives, and you want to know what's going on. So you know that Carson's mom, Holly, was probably thrilled when she got the notification that Carson was FaceTiming her. Oh, awesome. There's my boy. Only to find out that he was FaceTiming her that. FaceTiming her from the bathroom and yelling, "What the hell is this thing?" Let me just say this. Holly Meyer is a legend. She handled that like a pro, like a boss. She wasn't disgusted, and if she was, she hid it very well and talked about how relieved she was and told him to get medical attention to figure out what it was. What a legend she is. Like me? Like my son Jake is looking at colleges right now. He's going away the year after next. If Jake couldn't adore the kid more, absolutely love my son. Obviously, right? Love my son. But I'm here to tell you, if he FaceTimes me, a 25-inch orange worm, I'm telling him to lose my number. In fact, I'm going to cancel the account altogether. Because that thing was a tapeworm. A 25-inch tapeworm with a complicated Latin name that I will not bother you with right now. But apparently, it comes from eating undercooked fish. Oh, and according to the Center for Disease Control, and anytime you're quoting the Center for Disease Control, you know you got an issue. Meyer got lucky. He was lucky that it was only a 2-foot worm. Because apparently that beast in question can grow to 30 feet. Yeah, I said that. A 30-foot long tapeworm. You could use it to measure first downs. Just get the chain gang out there for a fourth down measurement and bring the worm. Imagine them stretching out that tapeworm. Oh, look at the nose of the football just short of the head of the worm. And with that, I'm officially off the undercooked fish bandwagon. From now on, I'm going to order everything well done. Just burn the hell out of that salmon and that tuna, because the last thing I'm interested in is a 30-foot tapeworm. Or even a 2-foot tapeworm. In fact, after hearing that story, good luck getting me to eat fish ever again. Good luck getting me to eat ever again. Not only am I off the undercooked fish bandwagon, I'm off the food bandwagon. I'm off food. Totally. Ever. I won't eat again. Hell, I know I'm not going to sleep ever again.
It goes without saying that the U.S. Postal Service is an important tool for any business reaching every household every single day. Now, Stamps.com is the easiest way to access all the amazing services of the post office. You see, Stamps.com never closes. You can print postage for letters or packages at your convenience 24/7. Mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. And create your Stamps.com account in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Click, print, mail, and you are done. Bam, it's that easy. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. And I can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using my own computer and printer. And I do, and you should too. I use Stamps.com because it is so easy and because of the convenience. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer, which includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. So go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. To get this deal, go to stamps.com and enter the code name jungle. I love this product. I know you will too. Aaron Wise is my guest. Aaron, it's nice to have you on the show this morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good, Aaron. So you've had a couple of days for it all to sink in. I wonder, how does it feel to record your first PGA Tour win, and does it feel the way you thought it would?
It's incredible, you know. It's a lot of work. It's probably busier than I thought it would be, but handling it all and loving every second of it.
Right, so you were building towards this moment in the sense that earlier this month you finished in a tie for second at the Wells Fargo Championship. What did you take away from that experience of being in contention and playing intense rounds on the weekend that maybe you were able to apply to the Byron Nelson?
Yeah, it just took a lot of confidence away from that experience. It was pretty cool to be in that situation for, that was really my first time ever, and to see how well I played, and especially going up against the likes of Jason Day around such a tough golf course, it was pretty cool, and I took so much confidence away, and I think that really did great for me there at the Byron Nelson. You know, I played great down the stretch and was really proud of the way I closed out that tournament.
You know, there's breaking through and finishing, and then there's dealing with a four-hour rain delay, and then going out and breaking the tournament scoring record. So what was that whole Sunday experience like for you?
Yeah, you know, it almost makes it a little bit sweeter just because for a rookie to be put in that situation and for me to overcome just that weight, you know, because obviously thoughts are popping into your head and you've got to be able to calm yourself down. And it really made the win that much more sweeter for my first win to come after, you know, really having to wait and think about it for a long time. And, you know, I was really proud of the way I was able to calm myself down, go out there and play golf just like I had the rest of the week. You know, I played great. I hit the ball amazing, and I made some putts.
Aaron Wise joining us. You were able to calm yourself down. I'm kind of curious how you did that. For instance, when you're dealing with a rain delay, it's going to mess up your routine. It could easily mess with your head. So how were you able to stay in the right headspace and still go out there and shoot a 65 on Sunday?
Yeah, you know, luckily my mom flew in, and she was there to kind of spend the time with me. And we went to breakfast and hung out and kind of just killed the time. And that definitely helped a ton. And then once I kind of start my pre-round warm-up, which is like by going to the gym to warm my body up before I head to the course, it was all kind of like just getting into the regular flow. You know, I kind of forgot about that I had just gone through rain delay, and it was like as if I just had a really late tee time that day and was starting my warm-up really late.
Now, the mom angle is interesting in the sense that the story was she was hanging out with you during the rain delay, hoping to help you kill that time, but you had to kick her out of your room. Is that story true? And if so, how did that go down?
Yeah, it is true. It was, you know, kind of funny just because she was amped up. She was excited. You know, everyone around me was anxious to kind of get the day started. And obviously, I had to kind of keep my emotions under control. And I didn't really want to think about the future as she was. And, you know, I just was like, look, I'm going to take a nap. I need to kind of refresh and hit the refresh button. And she kind of left, went down to the lobby, and, you know, the rest is history. I was able to refresh. It was awesome to spend the win with her after spending the whole morning with her. And you know, there was a bunch of nervous energy that morning. And for me to go out there and play as well as I did and get the win was pretty incredible.
You know, all the more amazing, Aaron, because, again, your first win and you're a rookie. You sound like you've been doing this a long time. You sound like somebody who's been through this before, even if you had not. Now, what's really amazing is, correct me if I'm wrong, were you not playing high school golf only 4 years ago? And now you're winning on the PGA Tour. I mean, does that all feel real to you? That's kind of amazing to me.
That's the one stat that people keep bringing up that still blows my mind. You know, it's college, I understand, but to be in high school 4 years ago is truly unreal to me, just because I feel so far removed from that part of my life. I feel like that was ages and ages ago, and to think it's only been 4 years and how far I've come, it's truly eye-opening to see how quickly it's all happened, and kind of puts things in perspective for me to kind of realize that how lucky I am and how special it's been, and to soak it all in while it's happening.
We're talking to Aaron Wise for a few more moments. You know, I guess if you were like this crazy, crazy prodigy, and don't get me wrong, I mean, you're an extremely gifted guy, but if you had had this amazing junior background, maybe people could see this coming. But the fact is, you didn't have a huge profile in the junior golf ranks, in part because you didn't travel very much. So when did you first start to think, not only can I play college golf, I could take this to the next level, and I can make a career out of this?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I didn't even think I could play college golf until, like, junior year of high school, when I luckily qualified for Junior Worlds, which is right down the street from my house, and came third. And that was really the first big national junior golf tournament I'd ever played in. And for me to finish third, you know, opened the eyes of a lot of college recruiters to me and allowed me to go to college. And then, you know, I didn't even think I could play professional golf until middle of my sophomore year in college. So it all has happened so fast, and you know, it's truly just come together, and I just try to keep believing in myself, keep playing great golf, and, you know, they say if you play great golf, the rest takes care of itself, and it seemed like that's kind of happening for me.
Again, you don't sound like a rookie. Now, when you talk about it coming together, I mean, the plan came together. Now, lots of people have good plans that do not come together, but think about this. The ideal way to go about this would be to, say, win on the McKenzie Tour, then get a win on the Web.com Tour, and then get to the PGA Tour, but that's exactly how that's set up, and that's exactly what you did. How were you able to lay out a plan like that and then go out and execute it the way you have?
Yeah, you know, I just, when I was decided to leave and leave school to go play professional golf, I just worked with my team, and we came up with a great plan. And like you said, there's a ton of great plans out there, but rarely are they executed as well as somehow ours luckily worked out. And, you know, I think I might be the first person to ever win their first year on the McKenzie, move to the Web, win the first year there, move to the PGA, and win the first year on the PGA. So it's truly just, you know, a testament to, you know, playing great golf and, you know, believing in myself, and it's just worked out incredible. I can't, you know, think I'm lucky enough for that all to come together like it did.
Aaron Wise joining us. A couple of quick thoughts before I let you go. At one point, you were playing a practice round with Phil Mickelson, and he told you, just whatever you do, remain patient. It's easy to get caught up week to week, and it can become a real roller coaster life on tour, but it's only going to lead to stress. What did you take away from that conversation with him?
You know, it was pretty cool to have that conversation with him after all his years out on tour, for him to tell me that, you know, it's a long time and it's going to feel like a sprint. And that really resonated with me, because at the time I talked to him, it did feel like a sprint. You know, I had just left college. That was at a U.S. Open practice round when he gave me that advice. So I just left college. I had McKenzie Tour status, but obviously your goal is to be on the PGA Tour at that point, and you're trying to do it as quickly and as fast as possible. And for him to tell me, look, you're a great player, it's going to come, you just need to relax and be patient and let it happen, was pretty cool, and something that, you know, advice I'll never forget, just because it's easy to get caught up in how fast time goes out here. And, you know, you got to realize that, you know, especially middle of the season, because I wasn't playing great in the beginning, and for me to be able to rely on that advice, stay patient, and, you know, my time came, and I was lucky enough to take advantage of it.
And then one last thing, another really cool thing. As some people know, you were born in South Africa before moving to the United States when you were three. I've run down your list of accomplishments: NCAA champion, McKenzie Tour winner, Web.com Tour winner, and now a PGA Tour winner. All great. But I would argue that there might not be anything cooler than having the man himself, Gary Player, tweet at you. What was your reaction when you saw that legend tweet at you last year?
Yeah, you know, it's not the first time. He tweeted me after this win. He tweeted me, I think, after NCAAs. And, you know, it's pretty cool to know that he's been following my career. He's an absolute legend in the game. And for me to have someone like that not only following me but kind of supporting me along the way just gives me a ton of confidence, and it's something I really look forward to. I've never met him in person. I hope one day I can get to meet him in person and thank him for all he's done for me.
This is how it goes on this program. If you missed yesterday's show, you missed a lot. In fact, you missed more than a lot. You missed me give in to the internet terrorists that are leveraging their Hall of Fame votes with a list of demands of me. Now, by now, most of you know, because I keep talking about it, but not as much as I could, about being nominated for the National Radio Hall of Fame. And by now, most of you also know that the category is going to be decided by a public vote. That means on June 4th. Can you write it down? June 4th. When the polls open up, I need each and every one of you, not a lot of you, not some of you, each and every one of you, to help all of us get into the National Radio Hall of Fame together. I'm not in. Doing this together is a great thing, and it's enough for some of you, but not all of you, as I found out, which is why yesterday I did, for the first time ever, sit down at this table to negotiate the terms of your vote. Because for the first time ever, and I will own this, I need you more than you need me. Here is the deal then. Now through Friday, June 1st, I am inviting you to send me your list of demands. These are things that you want to hear or see that I can make happen. You can tweet me at Jim Rome. You can email me at rome@habitate.com. I've told Hawk, run this thing. Take all of them. Put them on a piece of paper. You have 10 days to tell me what it is you want in exchange for your Hall of Fame vote. For the next 10 days, we will keep the list. Monday, June 4th, when the polls open up, I'm going to put every single one of your reasonable demands into a box. The box will hereby be known as the Box of Chaos. And live, on air, Monday, July 4th, I will randomly draw 5 of your demands from the Box of Chaos. The 5 demands that I draw will be paid off in full if you do your job and you get me into the Hall of Fame. It's like, I thought that maybe I'd done my job. Giving everything I have for 30 years, not good enough. You can do 30 years worth of work in 2 weeks if you get up off your backside and do what I know you clones can do. I've seen you before. I know what you're about. So, if you want your demand to be met, submit it between now and Friday, June 1st, so I can add it to the Box of Chaos, Monday, June 4th. Here are some of the demands. If you need some ideas, here they are. If you want to know what some of the demands are, here they are. One of the first things to come up, Rome, give up the rapper who hit on Janet. Let Lil Alvy host a segment.
Dude.
Take Hawk's porn stash down. Take your goatee, Rome, down to a stash. Do an interview on the Woodscopes. Bring back the hack off one last time. Let Janet host a segment. Finally admit Sarah Jessica Parker looks like a horse.
It doesn't make any sense.
Bring back the piece of crap list. Bring back the death pool. Make Hawk run a 10K in golf spikes. Wear Hawk-style shirts buttoned to the top for 1 week of shows. Slam a pint of beer live on air, Tom Brady style. Be the best man at Jeff and San Antonio's wedding. Take a nap with the CFO of Carnap Nation in his car for 15 minutes. Make James Kelly read tweets about his forehead for a segment. Mean tweets, actually. Listen, all these things can work. All these things will go into the Box of Chaos, but you can do even better. There are other things that you must want me to do. Remember, only one thing. Do not double back and try to reset the things from Romageddon. We're not doing that. We've already had that day. We're not doing that. Those things are not fair game. They're off the table. I'm not going to bring back the family. I'm not going to bring back Toby. I'm not going to bring back personal appearances as show fodder. I'm not going to bring back bum smack. You've already done that. You earned it. I delivered. It's done. I'm not going to resurrect that. These are all new things. Remember, I'll pick 5 randomly, June 4th. And then I will meet 5 of your demands if we, all of us get into the Radio Hall of Fame together. Listen, I didn't want to come to this, but what choice do I really have? It's public vote for my category. You clones have the hammer. And you got to swing the hammer. When you have the hammer, here is your green light. Swing away. What do you want from me? Lou in Sacktown. Hey, Lou, what's up? Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. How you doing, mate?
Good, mate. How you doing?
Pretty sound. You've got my Hall of Fame vote, by the way. I no idea how to vote to get you in, but I will persevere with that one.
Hey, do you want something in return, or do I just get the vote?
Oh, you just get the vote. I'm pretty low maintenance.
Good. My man. Nice job. Good looking out.
The reason why I'm calling, I just wanted to thank the Rockets for making the NBA watchable again. All these blowout games were making it as enjoyable as football. Soccer, I should say. I know how much all you listeners love the world's game. Anyway, moving on, Sacramento Kings are in meltdown right now because all the guys in the draft are making a point of saying they're not willing to go to Sacramento. I mean, I don't know why not, because all those dairy cows, pigs, and sheep walking around downtown should give it a unique feel, I would have thought. But anyway, that's not my call. Before I leave, I wanted to call on Friday in regards to the great event across the pond. But the show was consumed with foreheads and aircraft, and the show had a life of itself. So I called in today to not to thank, but to congratulate all you, all your banjo playing rednecks out there. You finally got a American female into the royal family. It's only taken you 900 years. I just hope the her Bundy family doesn't. Having negative effects. That's all I got, Jim. Get better, mate. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Oh, man. Rakim, Lou in Sacramento. Matt, what's going on?
Jim O, thanks for the vine. Hey, it must be late May on into June because America's little brothers up north, namely Pretty Boy Posse co-captain Matt and Van, you know, the other Matt, is in mid-playoff form right now. Ball-washing American NHL squads en route to Canada's missing link known as Lord Stanley's Cup, like he's some caddy at the local Maple Leaf Quail Farm golf course. Matthew, while the eventually winning American squad is laden with your denim tuxedo countrymen ice skaters, that doesn't make you or Canada winners, you loser. Maybe you Canuck cuckolds can invent a third sport for us Americans to dominate you at, because hockey and curling have already been ripped out of your lumberjack limbs. Yo, Canada, how about you export a winning team instead of round ham slabs that you mislabel, you furry freaks? And how does it feel to know Cal in Vegas will be attending an NHL championship parade in his hometown before any of you do? That's all I got, Jim. War American domination in sports, unwar the mindless Manitoba Mimbos.
Outro. Hey, Matt in Vancouver, you know you're the other Matt, right? We go to Phil in Alaska, my man. It's great to have you on the show, Phil.
How you doing, Mr. Rome?
Good, good. Phil, how about you? How are things?
Oh, doing good. Just dodging bears in the front yard and watching moose attack people on the highway.
Man, that's awesome. What kind of bears?
Brown bears.
Okay.
So, I'd like to tell these people asking you what they get out of voting that they suck. Because, like my six-year-old asked me yesterday when I asked her to help me take out of the trash. I said, what's in it for me? I said, dinner. You know what's in it for these people asking you? What's in it for them? How about quality content? How about hours and hours every week of you putting on a bomb radio show? You're the best interviewer since Howard Cosell, and they don't deserve anything but your best, and that's what you give them every day.
Good night now!